Good morning, America. This is the Katz Roundtable. John Katzman is here. Sunday morning. Where is the world going? I mean, the world is a little bit different than it was 90 days ago. And with us today is one of the smartest guys I know, a U.S. senator. He was a vice presidential candidate. And one common sense guy. He understands Democrats. He understands Republicans. He ran as an independent. Besides, we have us former Senator, U.S. Senator Joe Lieberman. Good morning.
John. Thanks for your kind words. Good morning to you. Always good to be with you.
The world has changed in the last 90 days.
Yeah, it has, and not for the better. I mean, it's a real challenge. Look, we've been going through hard times. We had a pandemic, the first one in more than a century. We had economic troubles. And there's a lot of political instability in most of the democracies in the world because there's so much change going on, both economically, technologically, and in a way culturally, which is unsettling people, and they express it through their politics. But now something that I don't think although we should have seen it coming from Putin and Russia, because he's been talking about this for years, the invasion of Ukraine, which feels like it's from another era. I mean, it reminds us of the long time that there were wars between nations, going back to the time of royalty, kings, royal families in Europe particularly. And here we are again with him invading Ukraine. And a heroic response by the people of Ukraine, a strong response, certainly economically with the sanctions on Putin, but he's got so much more, so many more military personnel and firepower that we're now watching a really brutal attack on the people of Ukraine. And where it goes, it's not really clear at this point. It's just.
Senator, I never thought. I always respected Putin. I always thought he was a very smart guy. But yeah. I never thought he was going to really attack other than just shake the branches. And now I have very little respect for him.
I know. I bet there's a lot of people who feel that way. He's clearly overreached. And. Overreached without a good reason. In other words, really, Ukraine was not threatening him. NATO doesn't threaten him. He knows that. NATO's a defensive alliance. NATO was created in the 40s to protect Western Europe and the rest of that area from a Soviet communist invasion moving westward. It was also created to try to hold the countries of Europe together after the Second World War, and it did both. Brilliantly, but it never really has taken off on an offensive military venture. So what motivated Putin? The only thing I could say was he's had this lifelong vision that the defeat of the Soviet Union in the Cold War was a catastrophe for Russia, and that his role was to rebuild as much as he could the Russian Empire. Well, I mean, this is like, 19th century thinking, but here we are with a man with 20th century, 21st century weaponry, and he's carrying this out. And you kind of wonder, John, I do anyway, he's approaching 70 this year. He's got tremendous power in Russia. He apparently has been able to really steal, I would say, billions and billions of dollars.
Well, the Swiss said, somebody in Switzerland said, we closed down his account, we froze it, $50
billion. Wow. Well, that's amazing. That's interesting. I believe that. But maybe he said to himself, yeah, but what's Russian history going to say about me? And then he took off on this venture, and he did overreach, as you suggested before. The people of Russia, his economy, have got to be hurting, and Russian soldiers are being killed, and that's going to end Ukraine. That's going to create a backlash as well. And the Russian soldiers, I assume, and you hear a little of this, have got to be saying to themselves, why are we doing this? They don't hate the Ukrainians. They know they're not in danger from the Ukrainians, whereas Ukrainians are fighting for their homeland, and they have a lot more, you might say, guts and reason to fight than the Russians do. But meantime, in the end, it's going to be hard for the Ukrainians to stop the Russians. But even if Putin and the Russians sort of take effective control of the country, they're going to face a withering long-time resistance from Ukrainian, we're going to call them freedom fighters, which is what they deserve to be called. I hope and pray that Putin looks for a way out of this for himself, but also for Ukraine and the rest of the world.
He needs an exit strategy. I was talking to one of the generals the other day, one of our ex-generals, I think it was General Petraeus, and he says that they were thinking of sending the chancellor from Germany, which the former chancellor, because she had a great relationship with Putin, to try to paint out an exit strategy that will make all sides have a little bit of respect.
Yeah, well, that's a really good proposal, and that was Chancellor Merkel just left that office, but she did have a good relationship with him. She's a no nonsense person. Incidentally, the German people and the new German Chancellor Scholz have really risen to this challenge from Russia, and they don't like what they see with aggression again in Europe, and they feel a real sensitivity to it, or whatever the word is, because of their history with Hitler. They don't want to see anything like that happen in Europe again. And
they've
been strong.
The Germans were responsible for 6 million Jews perishing, but they're also responsible for 20 million Russians, and they have a little bit of a guilt trip on that.
That's true. That's true, and that's part of why Putin accuses the leadership of Ukraine of being Nazis, even though the president happens to be, by total coincidence, a Jewish man, Zelensky. But he calls them Nazis because he's trying to revive all that Second World War hatred of the Germans for the number of Russians they killed, which, you're right, 20 million is the same number that I have. Just think of it. I mean, it was
devastating. That's a lot of people.
Yeah, really.
Let's switch over a little bit to Israel, Iran. I don't understand our government wanting to give Iran all this money. All that Iran did with it is use it to promote their terrorism activities.
Oh, John, I couldn't agree with you more, and I appreciate your saying it. I mean, it's hard to understand. The rationale that the Biden administration seems to give is the same as the Obama administration did, which is that if they don't make some kind of deal with the Iranians, they're going to have nuclear capability in the foreseeable future. But the deal they made in 2015 was just a terrible deal, as you say. They didn't stop their nuclear program, which is why we in Congress adopted those sanctions against them all those years. And they got billions of dollars, which they didn't use to help their own people. They gave it to all the terrorists they support in Lebanon, Syria, Iraq, now Yemen, I mean, just and Gaza. So really awful. And it looks like we're about to do it again. And, you know, the thing that is really infuriating me and just making me wonder, what are they thinking? Who's at the table negotiating this with Iran? You know, Iran made a demand, which I can't believe America accepted, which is they would not negotiate directly with the U.S. representative in Vienna on these nuclear talks. So he's over in another hotel. So who are they negotiating with? England, France, Germany. Okay, but who else?
Russia
and China.
Russia,
yeah. And so the deal that's being carried to the other hotel by to the American representative there from Iran is two-fifths Russia and China, who are obviously not wishing us well. And it's just got to be a bad deal. And I don't, if I were advising this administration, I'd say leave the table in Vienna. Certainly don't do it now in the midst of this war where Russia is really against us and the rest of the world. And maybe start negotiations again if you want, but at the table, only have our allies, have Germany, France, England, but also bring in Israel and the Arab countries who have the most to lose from a nuclear Iran. But I'm afraid that's not what the Biden administration is thinking.
Israel, we're both pro-Israel.
Yes.
Is the United States going to back up Israel?
I hope so. I mean, we have a strong relationship with Israel. President Biden keeps restating his commitment to that relationship. But, you know, there's a feeling in the Middle East, not just in Israel, but in the Arab world, as they watch the U.S. negotiate with Iran, which they know is a cheater and an aggressor, that maybe the U.S. doesn't understand at all in the Middle East and they can't rely on them. Now, our relationship with Israel has been very strong, but it's going to be tested if there's another bad deal with Iran. And if the Israelis and their Arab allies now, particularly the United Arab Emirates and Bahrain and Saudi Arabia, if they feel that that Iran is really about to go nuclear, they're going to have to make a big decision about whether they're going to try to knock out that nuclear capability, both by cyber attack, but also by bombardment as well. They don't have the same ability, capacity that the American military does to do that. They may need our help in providing them with some of the weapons that they would need to do that. But honestly, you can't expect Israel and the Arab countries to sit back and let Iran, which has told them they want to wipe them all out and take over their countries, to just get nuclear weapons and not do anything about it. Believe me, one way or the other, they're going to protect themselves, and they should.
Senator, we're out of time, but we've had such good discussions together. We hope to get you back again in the near future because there's so much more to talk about. But I want to
thanks, John. I always enjoy these discussions because they're thoughtful, and I learn a lot from you as well. All the best. Have a good day.
Thank you. And happy birthday again for last week.
Thanks, John.
Thank
God
you.
Bless you.